Sylvia Matthews Burwell is already on track to become the next Secretary of Health and Human Services. Senator John McCain, Republican from Arizona today, saying he'll vote to confirm Ms. Burwell as the Secretary of HHS. So far, we're not seeing any reports of other members of the Senate who will oppose her nomination. Tom Shoup is editor-in-chief at Government Executive Magazine, and I imagine, Tom, your situation was the same as ours yesterday afternoon. We're pretty much wrapped up for the day, getting ready to figure out what Friday will look like, and boom goes the dynamite.
Yeah, I was literally packing up and heading out the door when things started flying on Twitter that Kathleen Sebelius was leaving.
And then the follow-up with, I don't know what it was like where you are, but we were fairly surprised here that Sylvia Matthews Burwell, the OMB director, is the choice to go to HHS.
Yeah, it is kind of surprising given her relative lack of experience in the health arena. I think what it does say is potentially something interesting about their desire to have somebody with a strong demonstrated managerial skill set in that job, which is, you know, often not top of mind when cabinet secretaries are picked. So I think the fact that the president himself singled out her management ability as something that made her an attractive candidate for the job is pretty interesting.
That was one of two things that jumped out at me as I considered this yesterday afternoon, Tom. The management experience was one, and the other is confirmable. I mean, less than a year ago, she was confirmed 96 to nothing. Nobody voted against her. And so it would be extremely difficult, I think, for the Republicans in the Senate to make a case that something so dramatically unusual has happened in the 12 months or less that she's been OMB director that she's not qualified to be confirmed to another position.
Yeah, I think that's always a consideration in these things. The interesting thing is, you would think that might be somewhat less of a consideration now because of the overhaul of the filibuster rules making it easier to get people confirmed. You might have thought they were a little less concerned about making sure they had somebody who had a proven track record of being confirmable. But that said, this is a very hot button position, and I would not be at all surprised if they wanted to maximize their odds of getting a quick confirmation.
Yeah, getting her through the process and getting her in at HHS would strike me as being a tremendously important priority at this point in time, given the fact that there are a lot of things, quite honestly, about the Affordable Care Act and its implementation, not at a political level and not at an ideological level, but just at an operational level that we still don't know about. We still don't know a whole lot about the transition from CGI Federal and QSSI to Accenture, and we still don't know some of the data, some of the numbers that are involved with the number of signups and the number of signups that are paid for and so on. So those, although they're tinged with ideology and contentiousness because of the politics involved, there's still operational issues that seemingly having a steady hand on the wheel should be able to help make those things happen.
Right. They're by no means out of the woods, having gotten through, at least at the end of the day, relatively unscathed in the sign-up process. There are many, many hurdles yet to be overcome in terms of getting the law implemented. So it makes sense that they want to have somebody in there who they believe is a proven, effective manager.
I think it's funny, too, how isolated that folks like you and me and those of us that cover this stuff and especially the folks that work in it become from the rest of the universe. I can't tell you, I'm sure the same thing happened to you. Friends and colleagues in the media that does not cover the federal government on a daily basis were calling, emailing, who is this person? And it's not because they saw anything bad. They just never heard of her before. And she's one of the most important people in the federal government.
Yeah. It is interesting that, you know, she's sort of flown beneath the radar. Often OMB chiefs are fairly prominent people. Now, part of the thing is she just hasn't been there that long. It's only been about a year that she's been at OMB. And it does sort of call into question, you know, the leadership structure at OMB. I mean, there's been a lot of turnover there, and now there's going to be, they're going to have to find somebody else to run OMB. And, you know, if you're interested in management and making sure the government runs effectively, you really want to have some continuity of leadership at OMB, too, which they haven't had in quite a while.
Tom Shoups, the editor-in-chief of Government Executive Magazine, and that's exactly where I wanted to go next, is what does this say, do you think, about the administration's view of the Office of Management and Budget, because they have, I mean, quite frankly, they've let that agency languish for long periods of time without people in some of the key roles there. And it's not just the director job. I mean, think about how long we went without a DDM. Think about how long we went without the deputy director job that Brian Deese took. Joe Jordan's been out as OFPP administrator now for a period of time, and so on and so forth.
And wasn't in that long himself either.
That's correct. And so the transition there, turnover may be too strong a word, but the transition there has been almost ongoing for a good part of this administration, Tom.
Yeah, it is something of a revolving door in terms of its leadership there. And I think maybe on the plus side for the administration, it's clearly something of a proving ground for people to move on to other things. But it does create problems in terms of lack of continuity, particularly in these management-related jobs, the procurement job, the deputy director for management, Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, which is always a difficult one for them to fill. So, you know, these things, you know, they have a history of getting sort of overlooked, and that's certainly recently kind of been the case in the administration, that people tend to cycle through them, and that creates a real problem. When what you really need to focus on is managing federal programs and agencies, and when they've identified that as something that they need to focus on, and when they learned the hard way that if you don't focus on it in something like healthcare.gov, it can really come back to bite you.
But the term that you use, proving ground, although I will certainly support the accuracy of it, I think you're 100% correct. I'm not sure that's really the optimal way you want to look at the Office of Management and Budget. I mean, when I go on and talk to different folks about this, and they say, what does the Office of Management and Budget do? I tell them, well, just about any time that you see some news report that says the White House is going to do this or that, somebody actually in the building, probably in the West Wing, probably made the policy, but they're going to send it over to the Office of Management and Budget to execute it. And so I would think that an ideal structure would kind of be the other way around, that you would want people who are in the executive branch agencies who understand that interaction with the White House policy shop in the Office of Management and Budget to then move for that to be the proving ground and for OMB to be the big leagues when it has so much impact and so many implications on the operation and of the agencies and the execution of policy.
Yeah, I think what tends to happen in modern American government is the cabinet agencies have so much less. It's not so much less power, but less interaction with the White House, and so they tend to be out on their own. And the real interaction in terms of running the government is between the White House and OMB. So in any one of these crisis situations, it's OMB, as you point out, gets heavily involved. And this is where Sylvia Burwell, I'm sure, made a name for herself with the administration, is in dealing with the sequester and the shutdown. And so the people high up at the White House get to know her, and then the same thing sort of happened with Jeff Zients, I think. Then they become a person that they feel that they can rely on to take on some new task, whereas cabinet secretaries tend to be picked for political reasons, as political rewards or to appease a particular interest group or other, and then they get to come to cabinet meetings every once in a while, and they don't really get that close connection with the White House.
And I agree with you about the typical role and place of most cabinet secretaries. It strikes me that there are people who are brought in at the deputy secretary level and maybe a level or two below that that would be appropriate for the kinds of operational positions that have to happen. And I recognize the situation at HHS is unique, Tom, because of the healthcare.gov and Affordable Care Act implementation bumps that the administration has come across, and they want somebody. This strikes me as a similar type of appointment as as Mr. Koskinen at the Internal Revenue Service, somebody who's known as, to use the old Washington term, a workhorse, not a show horse.
That's right. And that is not unusual in second terms, to go for the people who have a proven track record, who you think they're going to get the job done, they're going to be able to manage something, they're not going to embarrass the administration in some way, and they're just good at their jobs. And, you know, those tend not to be the people that get appointed first, because there's no splash. You know, there's no political reward for it.
I do want to call attention to the topic that we were going to talk about originally, Tom. You wrote a piece about the size of government and the context of a comment made by former Senator Jim DeMint on slavery and whether big government had anything to do with slavery. And we're going to link that piece at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. Maybe we can talk about that at some point in the future. It's a great piece.
Well, thanks. I'd love to.
Tom Shoups, editor-in-chief of Government Executive Magazine, and you can hear my conversation with Tom later this afternoon in addition to reading his piece at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.